DiscerningHearts.com presents The Great Cloud of Witnesses, Guides for Prayer, with Father Mark Sisson. The Catechism of the Catholic Church states that the witnesses that have preceded us into the kingdom, especially those that the Church recognizes as saints, share in the living tradition of prayer by the example of their lives, transmission of their writings, and their prayer today. It goes on to state that many spiritualities have developed throughout the history of the churches. The different schools of spirituality share in the living tradition of prayer and are essential guides of the faithful. In their rich diversity, they are refractions of the one pure light of the Holy Spirit. The Great Cloud of Witnesses, Guides for Prayer, with Father Mark Sisson. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Father Sisson, thank you so much for joining me.
You're very welcome. Always a joy to be here.
This is a beloved saint. Knowing how to pray with him, learning from his prayer, I think it would be a real great gift to all of us.
In the life of the church, there have been so many different, there have been great martyrs that are inspirations, like a St. Maximilian Kolbe or Edith Stein or St. Teresa Benedict of the Cross. There have been great scholars like a Thomas Aquinas or a St. Augustine, especially with his conversion story. There have been, along with that, saints that have been great sinners and a whole variety, of different saints. But I would dare say that few saints have had the ability to really captivate the imagination and the hearts of so many people throughout the centuries as a Saint Francis. There's just something about him, something about his humanness maybe earthiness is another way of saying it. I think it's really, it's just really attractive to people. And I think it's something that can really help each one of us to grow in our own spiritual lives and to deepen our relationship with Christ.
The Bernardones, they were merchants in fine fabric. And that, as you said, caused the family to have the type of wealth that it's surprising for us today to think that a young man would totally renounce, but yet he did.
Exactly. And I think that's one of the things, especially in our opulent Western culture, especially here in the United States, that makes Francis and the way that he preached the gospel so attractive, because I think people in their hearts, a lot of times they come to the point where I've got all this stuff. I got a big house. I've got the smartphone where I'm constantly plugged into to everybody. I check my Facebook every 2 minutes or every 1 minute or however often those status updates come up, and I'm running here and there. I got a nice car. I've got all this stuff. Every luxury that you could possibly really want or desire, and so many times we get to that point and we just say, is this all there is? There's got to be something more than this. But we're constantly told from the time that we're little kids, you got to have money, you got to have stuff, you got to have this, you got to have that, and that it's the constant message that we're receiving via the media, and we really, in a certain sense, idolize that, just having a great amount of wealth. When I'm in the classroom, I'll ask the kids, I'll ask them things like, what's the most important thing in life? And they'll get the answer right. It's God, and God is more important than money and all of these kinds of things. But then you ask them, okay, who wants to win the lottery? everybody puts up their hand is like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Why do you want to win the lottery? So I have a lot of money. Why? So I can buy things. So I can be happy. You know, and so we live under this illusion that if I have a lot of stuff, or if I can buy a lot of things, or I have the power to buy a lot of things, then I'm going to be happy. And so St. Francis stands as a stark contrast to that, because he didn't say, I want to be rich. He said, I want to be poor. Mm-hmm. Who among us wants to be poor? and we're not just talking spiritually poor here. I mean, he wanted the physical manifestation of poverty as well in his life, and he lived it. And so he gave away everything, and he lived the life of a beggar, and with absolutely nothing. And that was really the part of that initial charism of the Franciscan order. The his basic, the primitive rule, it came from the Bible, but it was really to follow the teachings of our Lord Jesus Christ and to walk in his footsteps. That's it. And so St. Francis, mm-hmm. you know, he started thinking about that. What is it like to follow in the footsteps of Christ? Well, he's God. God, he is existence itself, the second person of the most blessed Trinity. And yet, as it says in St. Paul, he empties himself and took the form of a slave, being born in the likeness of men. And that self-emptying was something that really touched the heart of St. Francis, and that he realized that if I want to be filled up with Christ, I have to be emptied of everything else. And so that's why he always strove to live that life of poverty, because the only thing that he wanted was just Jesus. He just wanted Jesus in his life. And that's, I think, it's really part and parcel then of that Franciscan spirituality that he lived.
What is conversion?
I think if you look at in the way it's described in sacred scripture, the Greek word that is used for conversion is metanoia, and meta meaning a change, and noia meaning of mind. In that Greek word nous, that from which the noia comes, is the mind. It's not just simply our brain or our intellectual activity, but it's really rooted in the very core of the person. Mm-hmm. And so conversion, that change of mind that comes about, it's a turning away from a certain path in life and changing and turning to something completely different. So it's a turning away and it's a turning towards. So in our Christian understanding of it, it's a turning away from sin, and it's turning towards our Lord, it's turning towards Christ. And so the fundamental characteristic of that conversion then becomes that encounter that we have with Christ, because it is Christ himself and that encounter with Christ that enables us to leave behind everything. It's that encounter with Christ that changes us from the inside, so that we can live always as a child of God, and we can receive the gift of that love and that mercy that God has for us.
So even in that definition, then, we see St. Francis really is one of those saints that is just a beacon for conversion. I mean, he just, when you look at the radical turning of his life, and it seemed as though it was a lifetime of conversion, a lifetime of turning it. In his life, it just got deeper and deeper. It's something that isn't just a one-time event.
That's an excellent point. That's exactly it. Sometimes we have this idea that conversion is just that St. Paul type moment where we have this, you know, radical encounter with Christ or whatever, and then our whole life is changed after that. But even St. Paul, you know, even after he had that encounter, it wasn't just a a one-time event. And so in the life of St. Francis, his conversion was really, it's more of a process. It's not just all of a sudden you wake up one day and you see the light and it's, whoa, you know, and mm-hmm. I got this, you know, this change. But it's normally it's a part of a process. Normally it's part of maybe an experience that we have, or maybe it's that we have an encounter with someone that starts us to think about something in that. And one thing leads to another thing, and then another door is open, and then another one is open. And in the life of St. Francis, he, you know, some of the things that may have been important, we don't know for certain, but some of the things that may have been important was, for example, in 1201, he was, he had joined a military expedition, and he was taken prisoner, and he spent a year as a captive. And one of the things that I'm able to do is I have a jail ministry, and I'll go up to the Portsmouth jail twice a month and on a as need basis here in Odo County. And I'm also I just got approved to go to the state pen. But one of the things that I found is that when you're captive and you lose your freedom, you've got a lot of time to think. And you've got a lot of time, if you're open to it, to pray. And it's something that's very, it's very, very uncomfortable. But I can tell you that some of the most beautiful, heartfelt confessions that I've heard as a priest have been in jail, just because that silence, that quiet, that aloneness, there's something about that that gives us the capacity for a little bit more introspection on our life, to look and to be able to see how our actions are not only affecting other people, but how they're affecting ourselves. And in that quiet, in that silent, in that isolation is a place where God can sometimes speak to us if we allow him. Because when we're in the outside world, you know, we're running here, we're running there, we've got, you know, the music, we've got the TV, we've got, you know, whatever else, it is always, you know, distracting us. But to have that quiet and to have that silence, as uncomfortable as it may be, can really help us in that spiritual growth. And so, again, we don't know for sure, but when you start to look at the things that happened after that captivity, it wasn't completed at that point. And that's one of the things that conversion is a process, because when he got out upon his return to Assisi in 1203, he kind of returned back to his carefree life. And that's one of the things that I know in like the jail ministry, the people that are there, I really do believe that they are repentant for things that they've done. But once you're released and you go back into that same neighborhood, you go back to that same situation, you go back to all those same things, it's very easy to regress in the spiritual life then at that point. And so he just kind of, you know, he went back, he may have had some good intentions and things like that, but then all of a sudden he finds himself back in the same situation. So he falls back into the same habits. But again, it's a part of this process, this ongoing process that is going on in his life. And so, in 1204, then God kind of says, okay, you didn't get it with a captivity. Now he falls ill and now he gets sick and he starts having kind of this spiritual crisis. And born of that, he really starts to seek Christ with his whole heart. And that from that then is this desire to, you know, he has an increasing desire for solitude. He starts going on long walks up in the mountains. He starts praying more. And born of that is that ultimate point where he's able to say to Christ, he says, I want to give myself to you completely. I want to follow you wherever you go. And then you see what the fruits of that then in this moment in the square where he ends up leaving behind his father's house and ultimately giving himself completely to the church and giving himself completely to Christ.
It sounds as though those moments of solitude and those moments of crisis, and even in that suffering and his illness, he came into a relationship with a person, somebody he wanted to grow closer to, and that's Jesus Christ. And that relationship, I mean, that is at the very, very heart of the Trinity, of that great love.
It really is, because we, and it's those moments of crisis sometimes that provide the impetus for that. Because, as I said, it's so easy for us to just get distracted. And so those moments of crisis help shine the light on our own want. But in that, our hearts are also seeking the one that can fill up that lack that we experience, the one that can provide what our hearts are truly desiring. Because ultimately, all of us, what are we desiring? We're desiring love. We're desiring a relationship, not simply with other human beings, but we're seeking something even greater, because there's an infinite desire within us. There's a desire for infinite love. And so when we have those moments of crisis, then we start to seek, we start to look, and that becomes the moment where we are able to hear that voice of Christ then speaking to our hearts, and we're able to then enter into that relationship of love with him, you know. And then you have a moment like where St. Augustine says, you know, oh Lord, how late have I loved thee? You know, I finally, you know, our hearts are restless until we rest in you. You know, St. Augustine went through that as well, you know, just looking and seeking and trying to find, and then ultimately that relationship, oh, there it is. That's what I've been looking for. And that's ultimately that relationship is what St. Francis was looking for. And that's ultimately what he found in and through that prayer that was born of suffering and illness.
It would seem as though that Galatians 2:20 verse from St. Paul, that it is not I who live, but Christ who lives in me, that would be manifested in Francis, so much so that he became that great light for so many others. And as you have said, that medieval period was a time when there was a very strong middle class that became wealthy, and the children of that middle class, as well as those of the nobility, there was something in Francis that attracted them, and I don't think it was Francis. It must have been Christ, because when you have someone like a Claire, or you have someone like that, well, all of his many followers that came so quickly to him, that it had to have been more than just the man Francis.
Exactly, because you can have people that have just a winsome and magnetic personality, and I think. Francis probably just had natural gifts in that area that made people want to be around him. But when you couple those natural gifts then with that authentic witness of the gospel, that provides something that is incredibly compelling. That when people see that witness, they can say, I don't know what they have, but I want it. And they are inspired then to leave behind everything to follow Christ as well. And that's what, when you look at the fruit of what, you know, because you can see it different you know, like say a cult leader, you know, like a David Koresh or someone along those lines, that, you know, had the capacity to attract followers and to, but it was so distorted in the message that he was giving to them, and the fruit ended up in, you know, them setting fire to their own, you know, their own compound down there in Texas. But when you see the fruit that was born from the work of Francis, of people encountering Christ, of serving the needs of the poor, of having a joy-filled spirit and sharing the gospel, of preaching the good news to the brokenhearted. When you see the fruit that was born from that relationship with Christ and how that was able to enkindle that fire of love in the hearts of others, and so that they would go out and share that gift of God's love with others, then you see the authenticity of what was happening within of his own conversion. Because without that conversion, it just becomes a cult of personality, and people are just attracted by that. And when the person dies, then it falls apart. But what you see in the life of Francis is not only was he living that message of radical love of Christ, but his followers were living that out. And even today, you know, we find in our midst, you know, the children of St. Francis, you know, all the Franciscans, you have the, you know, third order Francis, and you have all these people that are continuing today even to be inspired by that, the life of Francis, and to seek that deeper encounter with Christ.
What would you say to the person out there that hears the challenge that flows from the life of St. Francis to live the gospel message in what seems to be such a radical fashion? What would you say to them as they listen to that and they kind of maybe feel like the rich young man who, after encountering Christ, walks away? What would you say to them?
I would say that not to feel, you know, if we have possessions, you know, not to feel guilty. And it's like, oh, you know, I love my stuff, you know, and I can't, you know, give the thought of, you know, giving up whatever. I think what we want, and because what that does is it puts the focus, you know, if we start thinking about all the things that we have to give up or that we should give up, then we're still focused on the stuff. But the radical simplicity of the message of St. Francis is that Christ is enough for us. And if I simply desire and seek Christ where he may be found, then the byproduct of that is going to be that I'm going to live a more simple life, that I'm going to be able to give certain things up that I really don't need. But if we focus on the having to give things up first, then we're setting ourselves up for failure because it'll just be too difficult for us. Mm-hmm. Seek Jesus first, seek the encounter with Christ first, and he will enable you. He will, if you need to give something up, he'll inspire you. He'll enable you to be able to do that. You know, sometimes I think even in terms of sin, sometimes people think, well, I have to give up this sin so that I can encounter Christ. No, encounter Christ first and he will help you to give up the sin. We have to, in the spiritual life, we always have to keep at the center. The main thing is Jesus Christ. And anytime we start focusing on anything else, even if they be good things, even if they be things like penance, sacrifice, all those things are good. But when that becomes the main focus of the spiritual life, it's out of balance. The center of the spiritual life is Jesus Christ himself. And once I take my eyes off him, I get myself in a big world of hurt. I'm in trouble. Keep the eyes on Christ. Try to deepen that relationship with him, even if it's in a very simple way. That's all right. Just do one thing to deepen our relationship with Christ, to grow more in a life of prayer. And that's that facilitates then that process, because it is a process. It's not a one-time thing. But Christ will enable us then and will inspire us then when it's time to let go of some of those worldly things, if that's his will.
Oh, how beautiful. You know, it kind of speaks in my heart to what you just said of Our Lady, in that she would encourage us to do whatever he tells us to do. And St. Francis is such a great model for that, because of that tremendous story of that mystical experience he had where, with the cross of San Damiano, upon gazing upon that, he felt the Lord say to him, "Francis, rebuild my church." And so he did. He began by building the Church of San Damiano, rebuilding it stone by stone. And yet, what a marvelous thing, Father Sisa, because by doing just what he thought the Lord was asking him to do, he eventually would help to rebuild the church, wouldn't he?
Exactly. And not just, he later came to understand that it wasn't just the church building.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where he started. You know, he started with one thing that he could do. He's like, if he would have, you know, if God would have told him all the things that he had lined up for him at the beginning, he probably would have been horrified. He's like, mm-hmm. I can't do that. But he started with the one thing that he could do, something that he knew how to do. And that led him then to a deeper understanding of God's plan for him. And that's our own lives. We just have to start where we're at and move on from there and do the things that we can do, change the things that we can change. And God will work through that.
I guess the message is, it's not to try to build the cathedral, but just all I may ask you to do is pick up that first stone.
Exactly. Take that first shovelful, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You have to start somewhere, and it begins, yeah, it just begins with those little things.
Any final thoughts?
I would just say, pray and continue to seek that encounter with Christ, to pray for the gift of simplicity, because that simplicity enables us to more easily and readily hear the words of Jesus and then to live them out. And so as we are simple, like children are simple, it is then that we have that capacity, a greater capacity then, to receive that message of the gospel and to live that life of holiness that St. Francis teaches us.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Father Sisa.
You're very welcome. Always a joy.
You've been listening to The Great Cloud of Witnesses, Guides for Prayer with Father Mark Sisa. To hear and or to download this episode, along with many others, and to learn more about the Great Cloud of Witnesses, the saints, blesseds, and others of the Church, go to discerninghearts.com. This has been a production of discerninghearts.com. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Join us next time for The Great Cloud of Witnesses, Guides for Prayer with Father Mark Sisa.